Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Adios, Angel, by Mark Reps. Narrated by Malcolm Hilgartner. Chapter 1. Angel Gomez's mouth tasted like cotton. His tongue clung unnaturally to the roof of his mouth. The stabbing pain in his stomach radiated straight through to his back. His bowels rumbled, begging to be emptied. Angel held back for fear he would once again leave the toilet bowl bloody red. Pain zinged through his throbbing head. The rank breath passing through his lips rebounded off the linoleum floor where he had fallen down drunk. His boozy dream state evoked a childhood memory of his sick, dying dog crawling into bed with him and licking his face with its final breath.
"Here! Have a shot of mouthwash. It'll wake your sorry ass up."
Jimmy Joe's voice boomed from every corner of the small trailer, echoing off the walls into Angel's pain-filled ears. Angel slowly raised his arm toward the tequila bottle dangling in the air just beyond his outstretched fingers.
"A little hair of the dog will cure more than the memory of a bad hangover. Here, take a big shot of this. Brand new bottle. Freshly opened. It'll calm you, I promise. Here, take it."
Jimmy Joe was insistent, demanding. As Angel felt the coolness of the bottle in his hand, he wished he had never met, never heard of the big white man, the one called Diablo Blanco by the Mexican brothers and tribal Apaches in the Florence State Prison. Angel downed a swig of the cold tequila. It was cold in his hand, warm in his mouth, hot as it wormed its way down the back of his throat, burning as it splashed against the walls of his empty stomach.
"A little fire to crank your engine, eh, Angel?"
He hated the burn of tequila, but could not escape its demonic talons. Tequila was the scavenging hawk. Angel was a helpless rabbit. Angel was the name his mother called him. He was her angel. He also knew that his real name, Cadete, came from his great-great-grandfather, Chief Cadete Gomez. The chief had been a Mescalero warrior who was hostile toward Americans, Mexicans, and other Native American tribes. It was said Chief Cadete Gomez paid a bounty of 1,000 pesos for the scalps of any enemy that crossed his path. With that heritage, Angel should have been a strong man, not weak like a child. Ironically, the name Cadete meant volunteer, a fact that was likely lost on the young, undereducated Cadete Angel Gomez. The Mescalero tribal band of native people had survived for centuries with the mezcal agave as its main food staple. The white man had turned that food into booze, tequila. Tequila now ruled Angel's life. Not that he believed it at the time, but the Native American Alcoholics Anonymous program at the state prison had taught him about how alcohol can control every aspect of a person's life. In his most sober moments, he wished to regain the power over his own life. Sobriety was, however, always very short-lived for Angel Gomez.
"Have one more, little muchacha. We have a few weeks before we have to be anywhere. We just have to sit tight and wait. We might as well have a big booze party. What do you say, little one?"
Angel knew he had no choice. Jimmy Joe controlled him as much as the tequila did. Why not party? What the hell difference did it make?
"Does that bother you, my little muchacha? Maybe you would rather just sit here and think real hard about what it was like for the last 2 years, cooped up courtesy of the state of Arizona, without the comforts a man needs."
Jimmy Joe swayed the bottle hypnotically back and forth in front of the young man. Angel envisioned his time in prison as he downed a large swig of the toxic alcohol. The cheap tequila smelled like cat piss. It bit like a venomous snake. The damn Diablo Blanco probably cut this cheap booze with turpentine. Angel remembered his grandfather's words, "Don't ever let the devil's drink pass your lips." He had tried to listen, but today the tequila charged his anger, twisted his mind. Angel could hardly believe the thoughts racing through his mind once the tequila grabbed him.
Screw his grandfather and his damned advice. His grandfather didn't understand. He never needed liquor, but Angel did. One deep, hard swig, and the demons returned, this time as a group. They howled to him that his mother was burning in hell. Then they whispered a secret. Not even the Blessed Virgin would forgive him for breaking his mother's heart by running with the evil man, El Hombre Malo, as Angel's fellow mescalero Apache called Jimmy Joe. The prison psychiatrist with his fancy suit and shiny shoes had dared to tell Angel he must quit drinking to be a whole person, to be his true self, and most importantly, to know God. Angel wasn't even sure anymore if there was a God, except maybe the God he felt like when he drank enough alcohol. The doctor had said, "Drinking makes you paranoid, Angel. It makes you lose control of your thinking. Alcohol makes you do crazy things." Crazy, paranoid. What was the difference? Angel knew his grandfather had been talking to the shrink behind his back. They conspired against him. The whole world conspired against him. Everyone except his lovely Juanita. Juanita and a bottle of tequila were the only two things in the world he could really count on. His blurry eyes caught sight of the many guns Jimmy Joe had brought back to their hideout after his trip to Safford. A third, then a fourth long drink from the bottle roiled his broken, damaged spirit. Tequila made him forget about his family and the demons that roared inside his head. Newfound courage rose up inside Angel.
"Jimmy Joe, you never said anything about guns. What do we need all these weapons for? We ain't going to shoot nobody. That's not part of the deal. You said no one would get hurt."
It was false courage, fueled by alcohol, that propelled his words.
"Stow it," growled Jimmy. "For the last time, learn to keep your mouth shut. When this thing is over, you are going to have to learn how to stay quiet and hidden, or both of us are going back to jail. One of us might even end up dead. I'd rather be dead than back in prison." "Careful what you wish for me, Florita. Wishes have a way of coming true."
Bile raced from Angel's stomach to his mouth as Jimmy Joe's laughter reminded him of how he had managed to crawl under this rock to begin with. His first time behind bars had been the county jail. It was easy time, 6 months for public drunkenness and burglary. The second judge had not been so easy on Angel when he was busted for forgery and car theft. The checks were easy to explain. They were written for cheap bottles of tequila and pills for him and his partying friends. The nice lady social worker had written in her report that Angel was an alcoholic and very likely cross-addicted to narcotic drugs. She said in her report that he needed treatment. When the judge asked him if that was true, Angel lied. Angel denied having had a drink in months. He swore he never did any drugs. Drugs were for stupid people. His problems were from a head injury, a concussion he suffered as a child. Angel claimed it was the concussion that confused his thinking and made him unclear. It was even the reason other children had picked on him. Life had not been fair to him. He pleaded for the judge to give him a break. His mother swore that every word her son spoke was the God's whole truth. The truth was quite something else. There never had been a head injury, and Angel was popular with almost all of the other kids his age. The car theft came after a night of revelry and boozing. He did not remember a thing about that night. He had blacked out from the booze and drugs. Angel did not even remember being arrested after he fell asleep behind the wheel and crashed into a gas station pump. 3 years in the state prison at Florence Junction, with time off for good behavior, was something Angel thought he could handle. He had heard the state prison had better beds and better food than the county jail. He had even heard the prisoners were better people in there. However, with his slight frame and soft features, he was vulnerable. Quickly, he became a target for the rapists. They called him La Niña, the little girl. Angel hated it even more than when Jimmy Joe called him Mi Florita, my little flower. But Jimmy Joe protected him, and maybe even saved his life. It was true that Jimmy Joe beat him, berated him in front of many, but he never asked for sexual favors.
I ain't never setting foot inside a no-damn jail ever again," cried Angel.
"That's right, hombre. Prison is a place for suckers and losers. We did our time. Now it's time we got some real money. Big money.
Tell me again how much, Jimmy Joe.
$1 million, maybe even 2 million. More if we're lucky. And I'm feeling mighty lucky. How about you, my little Angel? Do you feel lucky?"
Angel took a deep swig of tequila and grinned with happiness. Luck was running through his veins. Chapter 2
"Sheriff Hanks!"
Helen Nazelrod's crisp, hushed voice sounded unnaturally urgent. The wheels of Sheriff Zeb Hanks' chair sent a piercing squeak through the air as he scooted across the worn hardwood floor. Through his half-open office door, he peered over the top of his reading glasses toward his secretary's desk.
"What?"
Sheriff Hanks silently mouthed the question. His eyebrows rose inquisitively. The veins on the back of Helen's hand bulged bright blue as she squeezed the phone. Covering the mouthpiece, she kept the receiver tight against her ear. Her whispered utterance was a desperate response.
"Bomb threat. The high school. Line one. What should I do?"
Gesturing, the sheriff calmly issued unspoken orders that said,
"Keep him talking. I'll get on my extension."
Sheriff Hanks moved quickly to the phone and picked it up with extreme caution.
"I place bomb in gym, under bleachers, on other team side."
The accent was Hispanic with an underlying hint of Mescalero Apache, or perhaps mixed Spanish and Apache. Zeb suspected the voice to be at least part that of the Mescalero, the nomads of the Apache family. He had some contact with the few Mescalero in the area. Their voices were distinct enough, but it was hard to be certain. Maybe Helen could confirm this from her church work on the reservation. The slurred speech suggested fear or anxiety. It was apparent he had been in the gym before.
"Could you tell us exactly where you placed the bomb?" asked Helen. "We don't want any of the children to get hurt."
Helen was cool, logical under fire.
"No one gets hurt if you guess everyone out of building."
"What sort of bomb is it?"
The man on the other end of the line paused. His hesitancy sent a bullet of anxiety zinging through the sheriff's heart. Helen kept cool.
"The bomb? Please, tell me about the bomb."
"It's just a bomb. That's all I know. Nothing else I know. Now go get bomb before someone gets hurt. It's go off at 9 o'clock on button. Now just go get it. That's all I say. Apúrate. Hurry."
"Please tell me what the bomb looks like. That way we can find it faster," said Helen.
"It just look like bomb."
"But I've never seen one."
"It's red," said the caller.
"Like dynamite?"
Si, like dynamite.
Now please, go get it."
The man's pleading voice sounded near tears.
"Okay, but could you..."
The receiver on the other end rattled clumsily. A blast of static shot down the line, and the phone signal died.
"Did you recognize the voice?" asked the sheriff.
Helen's response was terse.
"No, I did not."
"Call the principal's office. Have them start evacuating immediately. Move everyone away from the school, far away from the gym. Call Delbert on the two-way. Have him meet Kate and me at the school. Get the fire department and the EMTs up there ASAP. Call Josh Diamond. Tell him to bring his dogs. He'll be at his gun shop."
"Anything else?"
"Pray the bomb threat is just a bad prank. Pray real hard."
Helen was already dialing the school's number as the sheriff barked out the orders.
"What's going on? Did I hear bomb threat?"
asked Deputy Kate Steele.
"You heard right, Deputy. Let's move it. The target is the high school. The device is allegedly under the bleachers on the visitor's side of the gym. It's set to go off at 9.
With sirens blaring and lights flashing, the usual 3-minute trip to the school took less than half that. Sheriff Hanks was surprised to see what appeared to be most of the student body milling about on the football field, away from the gym, just as he had ordered. Principal Newland, obviously panic-stricken, raced toward the sheriff's car, shouting,
We've just about got everyone evacuated. What do you need me to do?
Zeb eyed the newly hired administrator. She didn't look a day over 25. But these days everyone seemed younger. Everyone except him. Her accent, pale complexion, and blonde hair spoke of an outsider from the Midwest, Iowa, perhaps Minnesota. He thought of how everyone, everything, was changing.
Should I call the school bus company? Have them take everyone home?
Just sit tight, assured Sheriff Hanks. Keep everyone in the far end of the football field. We will go in and check this thing out. Make sure no one goes near the school buildings. Try to keep everyone calm.
Sheriff, are you sure everything is going to be okay?
It was a ridiculously absurd question, but she was young, and youth wore ignorance like a tightly fitting glove. He could offer no such assurances.
Keep your fingers crossed. Whisper a little prayer for us.
I already am, Sheriff. Please, save the school.
He was thinking, buildings can be replaced.
Are the bleachers up or down?
They are down all the way. We had an assembly scheduled for 9 this morning.
Deputy Steele and Sheriff Hanks exchanged a glance. The same horrible thought collectively passed through their minds. Maybe the idea was to kill and injure a whole lot of children.
Mr. Newland, a man with 2 dogs will be arriving any minute. Direct him to the gym through the front door. Tell him to double-time it. Advise him that 3 of us are already in the building.
Principal Newland's ashen face inferred a woman on the verge of shock. Sheriff Hanks grabbed her by the shoulders.
Do you understand me?
Yes. Yes, I know what to do.
Deputy Delbert Funk stood by the front door. The lumbering man directed the last of the school kids out of the building as Sheriff Hanks and Deputy Steele raced around the corner.
Why would somebody want to blow up the gym, Sheriff?
How did you know the bomb was in the gym?
Some teacher said everybody was ordered to get out of the gym first, the rest of the rooms after that. I just figured...
We got a threat around 8:35, saying a bomb was set to go off at exactly 9. The caller said it was under the bleachers in the visitors' section.
Jiminy cripes, said Delbert, pointing to a large clock in the hallway. We only got about 13 minutes.
The bleachers are down. Hopefully the lights in the auditorium are on.
If they're not, I know how to turn them on, said Delbert. I used to help the janitor sweep the floor during the summers.
Use your flashlights to check in the corners. Deputy Steele, you enter at the west end doorway, under the time clock. Stay toward the front of the bleachers. Deputy Funk, you go into the bleachers in the middle by the scorer's table and go along the back wall. I'll enter by the east end and go down the middle of the bleachers. We'll do 2 quick sweeps, 1 up and 1 back. Make certain nothing is taped up underneath the seats. Give the bottom bleacher a real close look-see. Check every corner closely. Got that?
Yes, sir, replied the junior officers.
If we find nothing on 2 sweeps, check the time. If we have time, we will sweep the home side of the gym in exactly the same fashion. If we find nothing, exit the building at 9:02. 9:02. Got it?
Once again in unison, the law officers replied in the affirmative. The bright lights turned on for the assembly gave clear visibility throughout the gym. Sheriff Hank's heart pounded with anxiety as he led his team under the bleachers. 2 trips under the opposing team's bleacher section took 6 minutes. The results were negative.
Clean as a whistle, said Delbert. Not even a dust bunny.
Nothing harmful visualized, reported Kate.
Let's check the other side and hope we have the same luck. Keep your fingers crossed this is just somebody's idea of a bad joke.
Josh Diamond's silhouette in the doorway cast a sinewy shadow. At his side, a pair of highly trained bloodhounds attentively awaited his signal.
Sheriff Hanks, said Josh, what sort of device are we looking for?
We're looking for a bomb with a timing device. We don't know the size or type. It might be dynamite. It's allegedly set to go off at 9.
He used a single finger to outline the already searched area.
We've completed a visual inspection of the visitor's side.
Sheriff Hank's words echoed eerily off the tall ceiling of the empty gymnasium as somewhere off in a distant part of the building, a phone began to ring. "Take your dogs and search the area where we've just been. You've got 3 minutes. If you get nothing, you have another 2 minutes on this side. We are all out of here at 8:58. Josh's hand signals set the bloodhounds into action. With great precision, the precisely trained animals went into search mode. As the clock above the scoreboard ticked away 5 fast minutes, nothing resembling a bomb was evident.
"Everyone out! Move it! Now!" shouted Sheriff Zeb Hanks.
Safely away from the building, the quartet formed a semicircle facing the school. The dogs, with their noses in the air, sat by their master's side. Josh pulled a pack of gum from his pocket, offering a piece to the others. Delbert took one. The others declined.
10-1, it was a crank call. Some pissed-off kid getting his jollies, said Josh.
I bet you're right. I bet it was a prank. When I was in high school, we'd pull the fire alarm just to get a little time off. Kids these days got a weird idea of humor, that's for sure, said Delbert.
What's the plan, Sheriff? Asked Kate.
We wait. If there is a timer on the bomb, most likely its next click-through will be at 9:45. Right, Josh?
If there is a bomb, that would be the most likely scenario. If there was one, Mutt and Jeff would have found it. There is no bomb in the gym.
They are true professionals, he said, giving each dog a treat. Nothing escapes their sense of smell. I'm inclined to agree with you. Let's give it 15 minutes. Then we will give the building an additional once over, added the sheriff. Deputy Steele, would you go inform the principal that we are going to do a building search? With the dogs, it shouldn't take more than an hour. Have her hold tight. No sense sending the kids home for nothing.
How'd you come up with names like Mutt and Jeff for your dogs? Asked Delbert.
Josh Diamond chuckled, patting the dogs on their heads and tickling their ears. When they were pups, they were exploring around at my store, like young dogs do, and they came across a case of Bazooka Joe bubblegum.
Mutt and Jeff, you mean those cartoon guys inside the gum wrapper?
That's right. The little fellows, at least they were little fellers back then, started in on that gum. The next thing you know, they were chewing away. Funniest damn thing I've ever seen a dog do. Delbert slapped his knee. His body spasmed with uncontrollable laughter.
Dang, I'd have paid a whole week's worth of wages to see that one. They were okay, weren't they? I mean, they didn't get sick from it, did they?
They were none the worse. I would like to think they were a little smarter for the experience.
Don't that beat all? Dogs chewing gum. Well, I bet you couldn't hardly teach a dog to do that if you tried, now could you?
Sheriff Hank stared at the low-hanging sparse clouds over the northwestern horizon of the morning sky. Behind the clouds, the peaks of Mount Graham were beginning to reveal the stable, unchanging nature of a mountain. The scene calmed him. Something told him they would find nothing. There would be no explosion. Everything about the call pointed in a single direction. Somebody, a disgruntled student, a sick practical joker, had wasted his time, his deputy's time, and that of hundreds of children and their teachers. God, as they say, was probably the only one who knew why. Sheriff Hanks glanced at his watch. 9:16.
Let's go back in and have another look around. Let's be thorough, but make quick work of it. Josh, I imagine you have a plan already?
Yes, sir, I do. I'll take the dogs and one of the deputies. We will do the first floor. You and the other deputy do the second floor. Then we will double back and check each other's work. We will finish up with the locker rooms.
Deputy Funk, come with me, ordered the sheriff. Deputy Steele, you go with Josh.
A search of 24 rooms, 6 lavatories, 2 locker rooms, miscellaneous nooks, crannies, and janitor's closets took the team exactly 57 minutes. Relieved that nothing was found, Sheriff Hanks gave brief consideration to kidding the young principal about making her students stay late to make up for the classroom time they had missed. The stressed look on her face made his decision for him. Something about the way she carried herself told him she would not find his remark humorous, especially under these circumstances.
"The school is clear, Principal Newland. You can let the students go back in now."
You're absolutely certain there isn't a bomb in there somewhere?
Yes, ma'am. We have searched the school thoroughly.
What am I going to tell the parents? The school board? The superintendent?
Ma'am? Asked the sheriff.
How do I explain a bomb threat? Do you know how many reports I'm going to have to file?
Yes, ma'am, I believe I do. Deputy Steele will be talking with you. If you need anything, do not hesitate to call us. She can help you with the specific details from our end of things on any reports you may have to file.
Sheriff Hanks knew all too well about report filing rules and regulations. He would have to file multiple reports. Delbert and Kate would have to do theirs. Under new state regulations, someone from his office would have to interview the principal, vice principal, superintendent, and possibly the teachers, janitors, and some students. Plus, he would need to get an official statement from Josh Diamond. His head felt light. His stomach rolled with queasiness. It was a bad day to have skipped breakfast. He searched his pockets for an antacid, but came up empty-handed.
Delbert, give me your report in a one-page summary.
Can I double-space it? Asked Delbert.
Sure, replied the sheriff. Just get it done today before you forget anything.
Right on, big boss man.
Kate, I want you to interview Principal Newland. See if she knows of anyone who has made any threats against any of the teachers. Get a list of recently expelled students. If anything looks the least bit fishy, check it out. Josh, I want you to know we appreciate your volunteering your time on this one. Can you give me a paragraph or two for the record? Something simple. Give Mutt and Jeff a little mention, too.
No problem. Federal regs, I suppose?
State, Fed, County, local. Hell, in the old days, it was just good enough to do your job. These days, it's all paperwork. And when we nab the SOB, he'll probably only get a slap on the wrist, if that. This kind of crap, interference with the peaceful conduct of an educational institution, is a Class 6 felony. But even more than that, it's a waste of county time and money. Deputy Funk, Deputy Steele, I want your reports before you go home tonight. Josh, get your statement to me when you can. I'm headed back to the office.
Chapter 3 Zeb felt the acid in his stomach backwash against the bottom of his throat. Gastric reflux. Is that what Doc Yackley had called it? A sharp stabbing pain in his grumbling gut led to a foul-smelling belch. The belch contained enough bile to leave a harsh, bitter taste in his mouth. Mental note, he thought. Always have some food before you drink an entire pot of black coffee. Sheriff, is everything okay? You're looking a little green around the gills.
Yes, Helen, everything is fine. It was a false alarm.
Helen Nazelrod, longtime sheriff's secretary, eyed her boss up and down. He was looking like a horse that had been rode hard and put out wet, as the local saying went.
Why would somebody do such a thing, Sheriff? It's just not right. I mean, scaring everyone like that. What's wrong with people today?
That's a loaded question. Maybe you should write a book and go on one of those daytime talk shows and make $1 million. I bet people are just begging to know what's wrong with everybody else.
Oh, Sheriff, you're kidding, aren't you? Me, on the TV, with Oprah?
Helen primped her hair for an imaginary camera. She was the perfect secretary, calm, tough, sassy, and naive, all rolled into one. Most of all, she was relieved.
Before you head off to Hollywood, you got any other bad news for me this morning?
The attempted humor of the sheriff's remark was short-lived.
As a matter of fact, since you asked, I do. And not just a little bit of it, either. I've got the freshly compiled county-wide monthly report right here.
Zeb placed his forehead in his hands, squeezing his outstretched fingers against his temples, pressing against the rising intensity of a sudden headache.
3 more stolen vehicles were reported. A little car, an old Chevrolet Vega.
A Chevy Vega? I don't know one Latino worth his weight in tamales who would be caught dead in one of those babies. I thought they were all on the scrap heap.
At least one of them is still out there. It looks like you are going to get the opportunity to look for it.
It's probably better off lost, but it does tell us one thing.
What's that, Sheriff?
The thief is probably a gringo.
That kind of talk isn't politically correct, Sheriff.
Neither is car theft.
What's the second vehicle?
The second vehicle is a monster truck.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?